On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
We are delighted to welcome to On the Bookshelf actress Ruta Lee, who has an incredibly wonderful career and so many roles that she's played on television and in movies and particular shows, live performances that we're going to talk about. All of these opportunities that she's had to meet wonderful people, and her newest book is Consider Your Ass Kissed from Britain Publishing LLC. And she tells about her career and the friends that she's made and the wonderful opportunities that she's had and the very interesting, her ethnic background, if you will, that also ties into one of the really great stories in the book. So I'm delighted to welcome Miss Ruta Lee. Thank you so much for making time to talk to us.
Oh, my dear, I thank you very, very much for sharing your time and your audience with me. It's a pleasure. I've never been to your beautiful state, and I'm thinking that if it weren't for this nasty COVID stuff, maybe I'd be doing book signing somewhere in the area.
Oh, yeah.
And have an opportunity to visit with everybody.
Oh, that would be lovely. Well, it's looking like things are breaking loose here, and that book tour might get to put you on the road a little bit. That'd be pretty neat.
Please, God, from your mouth to God's ear, you know, that would be lovely. Absolutely.
Yes.
Lovely, and I look forward to it. Tell me about your weather. Are you having a beautiful spring now, or are you getting rain today?
No, we're in that little time where we don't get lots of rain. We have about 2 weeks at the end of May when it's just pretty and warm, but not oppressively so, and not muggy with humidity. So it's quite
yes.
a pleasant time.
Well, I happen to be in Palm Springs, California right now, and May is one of our best months, except it's also a very windy month because Los Angeles gets gray with fog mostly during May,
mm-hmm.
which creates kind of a big wind tunnel that hits Palm Springs. But it is positively gorgeous, and of course, humidity is unheard of in Palm Springs. So it's an entirely different picture. But, okay, enough about the weather. Let's talk about fun other things.
Okay, well, first of all, things that I learned about you from your book. Let me first of all say, I remember seeing you on the Twilight Zone episode. I remember seeing you in movies. And when the book came out, and they said, would you like to talk to her? And I said, are you kidding? Of course I would. This is wonderful. And then I started reading your story and found out some really remarkable things. For example, that you are of Lithuanian heritage. And
yes, I am. Of course, most of us in America are of one or another different kind of heritage than mm-hmm. the Native American or a lot of English and Scottish and Irish. I'm of Lithuanian, and you know, when I was growing up, nobody ever heard of what a Lithuania was, because if you stop and think about it, and this all relates to what I talk about in one of the chapters of my book, when the communist Russia was running the world, it seemed like, you know, from where they were,
mm-hmm.
they took over all of the smaller satellite countries, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania, Poland, Czechoslovakia, you know, Hungary, everything else. And when that red boot came down on the necks of all of these beautiful little countries, they were taken off the maps. You know,
right.
None of it existed. It was all Russia. So it was kind of interesting to explain what Lithuania and Lithuanians were. As I write in the book, I had the opportunity of going there simply because I was brash enough after 15 years of trying to get my grandmother out of Siberia and then back into Lithuania. I had been trying for 15 years, you know, doing vizovs, which means formal invitations in Russian, Lithuanian, and in English,
mm-hmm.
asking my grandmother to come and live with me in the United States, in California, where the climate was better for her health, and all that BS, you know, you had to feed to the Soviet authorities, and that I would take on the responsibility and she wouldn't be a burden to her family or the state. And every 6 months I had to redo this mass of papers, and because they expired, and I did this for a lot of years. I was born in Canada, as you probably know,
right.
And then when I was a little girl, we moved to Southern California, simply because my mother thought that I was Lithuania's answer to Shirley Temple, you know. And she didn't know anything about theater, but she knew about movies. But we had gotten word that my grandma was dying, and so I did something totally outrageous, and I picked up the telephone, and of course it took a little wine in me, you know, to do that, but I picked up the phone and called Khrushchev. And amazingly enough, after about 8 hours of trying on what we then had that you're too young to remember, and that's the person-to-person call.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. No, I do.
Do you, honey? Because
yeah.
A lot of our audience won't remember person-to-person, but that was the greatest thing because you could make a telephone call. You'd pay twice as much if you got your party, but you didn't pay if you didn't get your party.
Right.
So it helped with all the calls. Every time I placed a call to Nikita Khrushchev, the Kremlin, Moscow, USSR, and the American operator, who was really somebody I couldn't learn to dislike, said, "How do you spell Khrushchev?" Well, who in hell remembered where the H and the C's and the sh, you know, came?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's a long, wonderful story that everybody can read in the book, but with the help of a lot of prayers from the wonderful people of the United States, because they knew the story of my going to get my grandmother, because Johnny Carson had followed it on The Tonight Show, like
right.
The Perils of Pauline.
Right.
And in fact, when I got my grandmother here, he invited her to come and be on the show. When you stop and think that she struggled so desperately in Siberia, my grandfather's legs were frozen on the cattle car that they were being deported on, you know, a 6-week trip to Siberia. And when they took his boots off at one of the way stations, off came the flesh, too, and gangrene had set in, and he died there, and my grandmother didn't even know. But there she was, this 95-year-old lady hitchhiking across Siberia, trying to find other members of the family that had been deported. And for what? You know, we're talking about little peasant people who really didn't have a pot to pee in, if you really got to it, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they had a goat or a cow, but that was it. And I presume this all happened because they were trying to repatriate those countries and take away the national pride, fill them with, you know, communists that took their places. But when you stop and think that when I finally got her home to the United States, I was given permission. Wow. She stepped off that airplane. We didn't have jetways those days. This was the 60s.
Yeah.
And she stepped off the stairs and dropped to her knees on the ground and kissed the tarmac and said, "Alo America, Achu Dieve," which is "thank you, God." And I think about that, and it brings me to tears every time I think about it, and I think about how blessed she felt and how privileged we are to be part of America, to be part of these United States. And I wish our youngsters would stop feeling so frigging entitled about everything. You know, everybody was so eager when they came from any of those countries in the world to work hard and live the American dream, and most of them filled that dream, you know? Oh, I don't mean to preach, but I just am so anxious that we remember how blessed we are and thank God to be Americans.
Amen to that. Never been to Lithuania, but I did get to visit Estonia.
Pretty country.
Yes, very much. When I got there, all I could think about was how proud I was of Estonia, Lithuania, and Latvia that stood up to the Soviet Union in 1989 and said, "We're leaving now. We never wanted to be part of you. We're leaving now. If you don't like it, come get us." And at that point, Russia couldn't do anything.
It's just amazing. And, of course, they're so grateful now to be part of the organization that keeps them safe, you know, that they've got other countries sort of behind them now.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, they worry every day because those rumbles keep coming, you know, from the Soviet Union. And,
they can't help the fact that they're directly in the path.
Exactly. And, you know, what scares the hell out of me, my friend, is that our young people have no idea of what living under a communist system is. And socialism and communism read very well on paper. We'll all be equal.
Right.
But somehow that doesn't work. Some of us are always a little more equal.
Yes.
And wherever communism has been, it fails. Why don't we recognize that and recognize that socialism is the first step to communism? Stalin said it. That's the first step.
Yeah, I've been to Cuba a couple of times on musical mission trips and
made
friends with musicians.
Tell me about it.
Yes, and they're wonderful people down there. They all know about America. A lot of them have moved to America since the first time I went down there in 2004. They all know that the route to freedom is to come here.
And of course.
They are brokenhearted at leaving their home, but they know, particularly if they have children, they say, there's no future for my children here, so we have got
That's
to get
right.
out.
And the fact that they can get out is miraculous.
Yeah, it takes a little finagling, that's for sure.
Oh, boy. Yeah. We sure took a long path, didn't we?
That's okay. Listen, the fact that your parents came from Lithuania to the United States, last week's show I talked to George Chakaris, and his parents were Greek and
yes.
came to the United States. So I think this is really very interesting because you're somebody who's a first-generation American in your family.
And yes.
So we understand my grandmother on my mom's side was the only one in her family who wasn't born in Norway. So some of us are fortunate that we aren't that far away from the immigrant situation, and it kind of gives us a different take on everything.
But I loved the immigrants that came and knew that they would maybe be working for slave wages. They came, they worked, they saved, they accomplished, and they lived the dream. And I just get very tired of people that are coming over and know how to work the system and are entitled to everything. Free this, free that, free mm-hmm, something else. Mm-hmm. None of our grandparents or parents did that.
No. They came here with...
They earned what
right.
they had. They earned their daily bread, you
yeah.
know?
They came here with nothing in their hand but hope in their heart, right?
Exactly. Oh, my God, you put that beautifully. Thank you. I'm going to borrow that line from
You're
you.
Welcome to it. Well, now, so you started out as a child actor. Your mom and dad moved to California so that you'd have these opportunities. In the book, you talk about the big breaks that you had with Witness for the Prosecution and Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, publicity tour that you did for that. It's very exciting to read about these things because I remember...
Thank you.
You know?
I'm so glad to hear that. I hear from readers and the critics, so on and so forth, something that is music to my ears, and that is that my voice translates to the black and white of paper, and that you can hear me talking, and that it's like sitting down and having a drink with me and schmoozing a little bit, you know?
Absolutely. When you talk about meeting Michael Kidd, you know, I grew up doing theater for fun. You did these things for your living, but the incredible people that you had the chance, you were just at the right time as the studios still in power, things were changing, but you had the advantage of being able to meet Gene Kelly and Fred Astaire and Mitzi Gaynor and Donald O'Connor and Frank Sinatra and Debbie Reynolds and all these amazing stars. You had a chance to work with them, but you also became friends with them. And the stories that you have to tell are really lovely. They're honest. There is a deep friendship that get from reading your book and finding out about all these people who were just people too.
I was blessed in that I came in at the tail end of the golden years of Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And they truly were golden years because today the business is not at all what it was. It's not that it was ever a gentle non-cutthroat business. Show business is cutthroat any way you look at it, you
sure.
know, and you survive the best way you know how, and hopefully it's with some style and grace and some moral compass, you know. But the blessing was that these people did become my friends, all these names that you mentioned. I mean, really good friends. And I didn't realize as it was happening how very blessed I was. How fortunate can you be
yeah.
to have these wonderful people? I always took great pleasure, as I write in the book, in saying that I slept in the same bed with Gene Kelly. Well, at least I did in the movies. And then he used to rent my little house in Palm Springs on occasion, so he actually slept in my bed there, too.
You worked with Marlene Dietrich, became pals with Charles Laughton. We get to live vicariously a little bit with meeting these famous people who had their foibles. They were humans just like anybody else, but you make them be very approachable to us in the way that you write about them.
I'm so glad to hear that, because all of these people had something marvelous to contribute, not just to show business, but through show business to all of our lives, one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Let's
mm-hmm.
face it, we all, in our hearts and minds, danced with Gene Kelly. Unfortunately, I never danced with Gene Kelly, and I never danced with Fred Astaire, both of whom became friends.
Yes.
And isn't that just awful? And I never danced with Mitzi Gaynor, who's also a good friend.
Did dance in a movie with Russ Tamblyn. That's
oh,
no small, that's no small
yes,
thing.
I certainly did. Now, that was heavy-duty dancing.
Yeah.
in the most wonderful, joyous way, because most of the dancers were very heavy ballet trained. When you stop and think that Jacques d'Amboise was the premier dancer for the New York City Ballet, Maddox, whom I was teamed with, was one of the fabulous Jack Cole dancers, and oh my God, he was wonderful. He does that wonderful Lonesome Polecat number with the slinging the axe and all of that. But this choreography by the aforementioned, as you did, Michael Kidd, was so incredible. When he first was approached by our director and the producers to be the choreographer, he said, "How in hell am I going to take, you know, dancers and make them look like they are mountain men, you know,
and ranchers
and lumberjacks, exactly. And you know, because dance is dance."
Right.
And in those days, of course, everybody thought you had to be a little light in the shoes in order to dance, you know. and of course, his choreography was so sensational and so masculine,
yes.
So butch, you know.
Yeah.
And we spent at least 6 weeks learning the numbers, and it took time. And I've got to tell you, honey, that I used to come into the morning exercise stretch class, the bar, as mm-hmm. it's called, BARRE, and I would stand there saying, "What in hell am I doing with these fabulous people? These are some of the best dancers in America." Rusty was not necessarily one of the best dancers, but he was a tumbler and an acrobat. He could do anything, you know. Mm-hmm. He was agile. I was just stunned that I got the job, and I owe it all to my Lithuanian polka. Because when I came in for the audition, I was asked to do a little ballet, which I did. I thought I was a dancer, you know. And I was very young. Let's face it, I was 16, 17 years old, you know.
Wow.
And then I was asked to do a little jazz, which I did also in my little leotard or whatever. And then he said, "Can you do something a little folksy?" Well, folksy to me was boom, 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 Lithuanian polka, you know, roll out the barrel. And again, my mother, when I went in for the audition, went across the street from the casting department at MGM. It's a beautiful church. And she went in and dropped to her knees and lit candles. And I don't know whether it was my mother on her knees or my on my feet dancing the polka, but we got the job between us. Let's put it that way. But I was always stunned and felt so blessed. And I learned so much, sitting being part of this whole team. Oh, what a great beginning. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah.
I smile when I think of it.
You did USO tours and AFRTS tours. You were on tons of game shows. You made all kinds of movies and TV shows. But there was one thing that I read about in your book, of which I had never heard, and it turned out to be, this could be another book in and of itself. This is so fascinating. This was the Thalians, the Society to Raise Money for Mental Health. And these were showbiz people who, did you put on charity shows and raise money for mental health with the very best show people that were alive at the time? They came in and they're doing a variety show as a fundraiser.
That was the magic of this. The magic of this, in some ways, was thanks to Debbie Reynolds, who was one of the founding members. And when she was a founding member of the Thalians, which is spelled the, of course, thalians.org. Remember that, listeners, because I'm going to ask you something later. The Thalians was put together by a group of young actors, dancers, singers, and people in allied fields, not just in the movies, but agents, writers, directors, managers, you know, whatever, lawyers. And they got tired of being called hard-drinking, pot-smoking, sex-minded idiots that had nothing to contribute to society. And they said, you know, we get together and we party and we sing around the piano. Why don't we put something together, sell some tickets, and raise a few dollars for a charity? So who did they send out to look for the charity but Jane Mansfield and Mamie Van Doren? Now, you want to talk about bust size. Holy mackerel, those ladies cornered the market on bras, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, they obviously did their search, and they came back a month later to the next Thalian meeting and said, well, all the good diseases have been taken. So they found a doctor that was dealing with emotionally disturbed children, which he described as a rotting apple in a barrel. Hmm. And if you don't take out that one and fix it, cut away the problem, then you're going to infect the entire barrel, or in our case, the community. Hmm. And he was dealing with emotionally disturbed children. So we did that for a lot of years. And how did we do it? We raised money by doing a show every year, which took a year in preparation. And it was amazing because everybody wanted to be part of this. All the young people in Hollywood wanted to be part, and all of the stars would come in, and everybody gave their time, their energy, and their money for nothing, other than the musicians. You know, they always had the musicians' union, and they always had to be paid.
Right.
Sometimes they kicked back, you know. It was an incredible experience, and I came in about 5 years after it had been started, but Debbie was kind of the mainstay. Hugh O'Brien was our first president. Then Maggie Whiting, wonderful singer, was the next one. Then Debbie, then Donald O'Connor, then me, as either president or chairman of the board for the next 55 years.
Wow.
So I would say that I have spent my life in raising money for Hollywood for mental health.
Wow.
And after about 55 years, we suddenly woke up to the fact that we were missing an opportunity to do something very, very important, and that is to take care of our returning veterans, these
yes.
beautiful young people that are willing to put their lives on the line for us, no matter where in the world we send them, and then they come back maimed, injured, both physically and mentally,
mm-hmm.
and they slip through the cracks sometimes.
Yeah.
They're not getting the best that America has to offer. And we said, wow, we have got to do something about that. So we refocused, our allegiance to the cause of the returning veterans. And we joined Operation MEND at UCLA's Ronald Reagan Hospital. And OpMEND heals the broken and fractured bodies. We Thalians are trying to heal the broken and fractured mind and spirit of these beautiful young people. And, of course, it affects their families as well. And I'm very proud of what we've accomplished and what we've done. Because, you know, let's face it, all through the generations, mental illness has been the hidden disease. It's been put in a closet and hidden. Nobody wanted to talk about mental illness in their family. And we Thalians came along and dealt with patients from pediatric through geriatric care in our Thalians Community Mental Health Center. And we Thalians were shining a bright spotlight, that Klieg light, into that dark abyss known as mental illness, and hopefully bringing some of those people out of that dark hole into the light of healing and living and loving. And, you know, we worked very, very hard. Debbie and I were sisters in charity. We adopted each other as sisters, so we weren't birth sisters, but we were sisters by choice and best friends. And we worked very hard, and sometimes we'd look at each other and say, oh, what the hell are we doing this for? Because it takes a year, every year out of your life, to get a show together, to get the stars, to get the honorees, to fill the tables and chairs with seats that bring in, you know, big bucks for us, for the Thalians. And I'm very proud of the fact that we did this. When people come up to us, or me or Debbie or whatever, in a restaurant or in a grocery store or wherever you are, and walk up and say, oh, my God, you have no idea of what your organization did to help my kid or my parent or my nephew, or it doesn't matter. And now we're getting the same from the veterans and their families, saying thank you, thank you, thank you.
Wow.
And that's our recompense, and that's the stroke. And of course, that's simply our way, and has been all through the years. It's my way now, and Debbie taught me a lot about it, of paying either back or forward the blessings that have come your way. And I'm discovering that the younger generation of Hollywood or show business, period, is not imbued with that vaudeville spirit of, if you've got something good, you've got to share with somebody and make it better for somebody else that can't do it for himself. And I please understand I'm generalizing when they say that, but it's not quite the same as the good old days when you could pick up the phone and call Frank Sinatra or Lucille Ball or Angela Lansbury and say, kindly get your fanny over here. We need you to be the star. We need to build a show around you. You know, will you do it? And you got yes. And with Frank Sinatra, not only yes, but he said he'd perform. And not only that, he'd pay for the damn orchestra.
Yeah.
You know, now how many people in the world are willing to do that anymore? Whoa.
Yeah.
I will say that Gary Sinise, I read his biography recently, and he is very dedicated to doing whatever he can to be a big supporter of the troops. I was so proud. I'd heard things about it, but I was really proud to read about it, too.
I'm very, very proud of him as well. He's one of the great people in our business that puts his money and time and energy where his mouth is. He doesn't just talk the game. He plays it.
This is what makes getting this opportunity to talk to you so important, because this is a chance not just to talk to a great star about a wonderful life, which you certainly have had, and we certainly could do. We could have sat here the whole time and talked about just all the cool things that you did. But talking about this passion that you have, I think that was the whole point of us getting the chance to talk today.
Oh, that is so kind of you. Thank you. It's very, very important, and I am passionate about it, and I certainly don't mean to preach, and my book doesn't preach, but it does share a lot of laughs and a lot of craziness that happened in my life, and how God works in the most mysterious and wonderful ways, and I just Indeed. Hope that people will take the time. It's not an expensive book. It's a fun read, and you get to know a little bit of inside about a lot of people. In fact, there's one whole kind of section that's dedicated to my brief commentaries on most of the leading men that I've ever worked with. And that was very difficult to keep everything into five words or less, you know? I'm rather loquacious, as you probably have guessed by now.
I kind of had the feeling it would be that way, and that's wonderful.
I did a 2.5-hour live talk and interview show with Regis Philbin for several years.
Right,
And then I was doing Talk of the Town with my partner, and so I was in your shoes, and I know how difficult it is when you get somebody that gives you monosyllabic answers, you know?
Yes, yes.
And you have to kind of put words in their mouth for them.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I truly understand how difficult that is. And you wonder, why do those people even do interviews? And do they not realize that if they have nothing to say, then just say thanks, but no thanks?
Yeah. Bruta, thank you so much. It's a great honor to talk to you. I've enjoyed seeing you in so many different venues. Even more enjoyed learning about you and then get a chance to talk to you. And you tell us about the Thalians. I think that's neat. You wanted to mention Thalians.org. You said we should have mentioned that before we left. So,
Yes, please. If anybody has, you know the work we're doing. It's very important. It's important to the beautiful young people that come home injured.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have, you know, $5 or $50 or $500,000, please go to thethalians.org. You'll see messages from Debbie and myself, and you'll know a little bit about what we do, and you can donate. And let me tell you in advance that if you do, or even if you don't, but you tune in or you go buy my book or do whatever, you will be doing me a great favor, and I will tell you, please take my title to heart and consider your ass kissed, which is my very most sincere, most grateful way of saying thank you, thank you, thank you. And that is to say, please consider your ass kissed.
Ruta Lee, our guest today, the name of a book, Consider Your Ass Kissed. It's from Britain Publishing, LLC. And do go to thalians.org.
Thank you, and thank your listeners, and may God bless each and every one of you, and please, God, keep smiling on America.
We are indeed.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. That was wonderful. And
what a great pleasure it's been to visit with Ruta Lee. Very strong woman, bases her opinions on her life experience, and she's had some incredible experiences, and about her new book, and we hope that you'll pick up a copy of it as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to check out my podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com as well. Till then, God bless.